This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'd like to welcome to the studio Joanne Wright.
Hello.
Hello. And Joanne is a volunteer at the Woking and Sambia Hospice, and she is here to tell us about something which I'm sure a lot of us would be very impressed with, because Joanne is running a marathon.
That's right.
So you're here to tell us something about that very important thing coming up shortly. When did you actually first become a volunteer, and why did you become a volunteer at the hospice?
Well, with the hospice, I do lots of events with them. So I've done the walks with them and those types of things. And I help where I can, because my father-in-law, Robert Wright, or Grandad Bobby, as he was known to us, is he was diagnosed in 2015 with lung cancer, which was asbestos related. And it was kind of a real shock. We weren't expecting it. And it happened very quickly, and he deteriorated very quickly. So we knew that there wasn't anything could be done to help him, you know. And Sambia were absolutely amazing. They helped my mother-in-law, Jean Wright. They came to her house. They just looked after. Without them, I don't know how she would have managed. And at the end of, you know, coming towards the end, he went into the hospice when it was across the road in Weybridge, the Sambia Hospice. And they were absolutely phenomenal, and I think that they made the end of his life as best as he could have had it. It wasn't an easy time, but it just really struck me how amazing they were.
Because they look after about 1,400 patients a year, don't they? Which is amazing when you think of that number of people.
Yeah, at the moment, I think in Woking, their new facility, they've got 20 patients there. And you think these patients, you know, they're at the end of their life. This is it for them. So this is the last, you know, thing that's going to happen to them. And it's just incredible to have these volunteers, people that work there. They must see the most upsetting things, but they are so strong and they're so helpful, and it just makes a world of difference.
Do you find you've become stronger since you started working there? Because they're, again, for everyone, I think, seeing people on their last leg, so to speak, it must be very emotional, especially if it's someone you know.
Well, I don't actually work in the hospice.
Right.
But I know nurses that work there, and one of the nurses, Jacintha, who works there at Woking, and she'd said to me at Christmas, she came, and she just said it's the worst time of year, you know, to be doing that, but trying to keep the spirits up and knowing that these patients are not going to be able to go home and see their families, just heartbreaking. And it takes a very special type of person, I think, to be able to do that.
No, so you just really do fundraising for
them?
That's
right. So I just do fundraising for them where I can.
I
think with Bobby, with Grandad Bobby, he was really into charity, and it was something. He'd had a stroke, so he wasn't very mobile, and he would sit at home watching all the adverts for all these things, you know what it's like, daytime TV, and he would get so frustrated because he wanted to help. And it was he was really passionate. And if he saw somebody on the street, he was begging, he would always, right, we've got to help. And so he would think I was crazy doing the marathon. He's up there now thinking, what is she doing? But the fundraising side of it, I think he would be so, you know, pleased that I'm doing that for them.
But you've got another amazing side to it, because at one time you'd never have been able to do marathons, would you?
No.
What happened to you exactly then?
So in 2004, randomly, I woke up one day and my wrist was swollen. I thought I'd broken it in the night. I don't know how. Turns out I had a very rare condition called reflex sympathetic dystrophy, which is a neurological condition which affects your nervous system. And luckily, they caught it very early. I was very lucky. Some people go for years without a diagnosis. But I lived in America at the time, and the guy who diagnosed it had seen it before. So I had rigorous treatments, nerve blocks, drugs, you name it, you know, and we got it into remission. And then in 2009, we moved to Switzerland with our company, and my son Edward was born. And I think that just erupted those symptoms again. And it spread. It was in my left arm, and then it spread to my leg and in my face. So eventually, I couldn't look after Edward. He was a baby. And they were threatening to put him in foster care because I couldn't care for him. It was a really difficult time. And I think that's the other thing, is that Jean and Bobby, even though they're in the UK, they would fly over to help me because I couldn't manage. And my husband was trying to juggle, Simon was trying to juggle looking after a newborn baby, trying to look after me. And on top of the RSD, I then, just to complicate things, got vestibular vertigo, which is type of vertigo. It's horrible. And I would just collapse at will. So I would be, oh, I'm okay today, I'm having a good day, I'll go out, and then I would just end up in a heap on the floor, and I'd look like I was having a stroke, so my face would slide, and people would ring ambulances and be rushed here, then everywhere. And so for about 5 years, I couldn't drive. I walked with a walking stick. Sometimes I had a wheelchair, and the doctors actually said that there would be no way I would be able to get better. People don't recover from RSD when it's at that stage.
So they never thought you would do a marathon.
It's a bit, when you think about it, it's a bit bonkers to think now. But I think...
That is amazing.
Yeah, for me, it just... For me, it was being told you will never get better. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I don't know, I can't imagine how this is going to pan out. I don't know, I can't accept that.
Sort of gives you a determination to do it, almost, doesn't it? Yes. When someone says, no, there's no way you can do that, you think, yeah, well, I'm going to prove him wrong.
And being in Switzerland, being in Switzerland, they're very, madame, this is not going to happen for you, you need to calm down, you need to accept it, because, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would be just come home in floods of tears, they can't do anything, they just want more drugs to give me more tablets. Mm. And it wasn't until I moved back to England, and in 2013, just before my 38th birthday, I was given more tablets to help with the vertigo. And I had anaphylactic shock from one of them, and I was rushed to St. Peter's, and they restarted my heart. This doctor there, quick thinking, they saved my life. And I think that day was the day that I thought, right, enough. I'm going to do something about this.
But you've been told that you couldn't do this and you couldn't do that, and your body had obviously been really cruel to you. So how did you get to that point where, I know you were at that point in the bed saying, I'm going to change it. What was the next step then? What did you do?
I think I decided I was going to try and think more positively. And I think I couldn't get out of bed for 3 months at that point. And my husband was helping me to go to the bathroom. It was just a nightmare. And I think I just thought, I've got to change my way of thinking. I'm desperate to get better, but I have to think more positively. And rather than keep trawling RSD websites where you see horror stories and, you know, some patients with RSD have their limbs amputated because the pain is so bad. But then the pain is still there because it's like phantom pain.
Yeah.
Because the pain's coming from your brain. Oh, so randomly, and I think just events happen when you change your perception of things. And I was on Facebook one day, and somebody who does EFT, which is tapping, acupuncture without needles, said, I've just had somebody into my practice with RSD. She's gone out a different person. I'm looking for people who I can test this on. Oh. 2 days later, I was in London with my husband, and he's like, what crazy thing are we doing now? Are you mad? Yeah. You don't know if this is real. No, I'm doing it. It's happening. And we went to London, and she was amazing. And it didn't happen overnight. It took me I'm still tapping now. I still tap every 2 weeks. But it's something that it's really hard to explain, but obviously the pain is very real. My wrist would go blue. Mm. I couldn't have it touched. I would be in agonizing pain. But that pain, when you x-ray my arm, there's no injury there. So it didn't make sense to me. So the pain actually comes from your brain.
Mm.
So it's like trying to change something in your brain to stop the pain signals. Mm. So with EFT, it goes back and it works out, why are you in pain? And I think with me, there'd been things in my life that I'd never dealt with, situations. Some people have a nervous breakdown. Some people react in a different way. To me, because I was a bit of a workaholic, that's how I coped with things that happened. Mm. That my body went into a shutdown and said, right, if you're not going to listen, we're going to trigger pain and we're going to do this. Mm. And so unlocking all of and it was really hard dealing with some of these situations that come up and manifested themselves in my brain. And we did it.
So how did you actually get to think you could do a marathon then?
I started walking. It's my Fitbit, randomly enough. I was at, do you know the
good old Fitbit?
I joined my local Weight Watchers group over in Oatlands when it was there, because I had gained 4 stones. When I started to feel better, I thought, do you know, I want to feel like myself again. And I went to Weight Watchers, and they just started selling Fitbits, and I was like, oh, I could treat myself. And I thought, this is stupid, because I'd only just got given my stick up, you know. And I started walking everywhere. I couldn't drive. Started walking from Oatlands, where I lived, up to Walton. Everyone think I was the mad lady walking everywhere. And from there, I got up to 30,000 steps a day. Mad. Yeah. And suddenly I thought, I wonder if I can run. My husband laughed. Simon was like, right, okay, here we go. Mad lady. But I started running around. So there was a little route, St. Mary's Road, Oatlands Chase. You know, Oatlands Avenue, Oatlands Chase. It's all I could manage, and it would nearly kill me.
But it's pure determination, isn't it?
So I did that, yeah. And then my son Eddie came home from Oakland school, and he just said, Mum, there's a half marathon in Woking, and they need runners, and I told them that you could do it. What? I can run 10 minutes, Eddie. And his little face, and he'd been through so much with me being ill, just seeing his face, and I thought, do you know what? He is, at the time he was six, and I thought, he believes in me, and he believes I can do this.
He must have been so proud.
And I thought, if he believes in me, come on, Joe, maybe, just maybe. And so I just did it.
When did you first do the half marathon then?
So that was in, when he was six, so that would have been, this is my third year. So this is the third time doing the half marathon.
Because you're doing that as like a warm-up, aren't you?
Yeah,
this weekend, isn't it?
I can't believe I'm actually saying that the half marathon is a warm-up.
No,
that's crazy.
I can't believe.
Is that 13 miles?
It's 13.2 miles.
Oh, my gosh.
So I just ran 6 miles this morning. I did 8 yesterday. So the snow thwarted me a bit last week.
I think it held us all back, didn't it?
I'm on catch-up. Yeah.
So do you ever sort of find that you've done too much then? Or because you're so fit all the time and you do exercise every day, you don't put strain on anything?
Do you know, and I'm quite an active person, and I actually became a Weight Watchers coach through losing all my weight. So now I run six meetings, and
fantastic.
I love it, and it keeps me on my toes, and I love helping other people. And I'm loading and unloading my car every day, so I normally get 20,000 steps a day, even when I'm working. So I think that really helps, because I'm always buzzing and I'm always going. And I think when you've been at a stage in your life where you think this is it, this is sink or swim, just grab it and think, right, every day.
And actually representing a group such as Weight Watchers, which is such a great group, and what you've actually been through is a huge inspiration to women.
I think it really helps.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
A great.
So how much did you lose then?
4 stone altogether.
And how long did it take you to lose?
Actually, it took me 7 months.
That is amazing.
Absolutely determined, because when I felt better, I looked at myself in the mirror, and a lot of the tablets I'd been on caused weight gain.
Yeah.
And I hadn't been able to walk, obviously. So I was determined, and I just thought, I just want to feel like myself again. I just want to be me again.
So was it the walking and the running and then eating, diet, change of...
Yeah, it was that. Do you know what? The biggest thing for me was the portions. Mm. It got to the stage where I was eating... My husband, Simon, is 6'1", and I'm 5'3" in a little bit. And I used to eat the same as him.
Yeah.
But also, when I'm in pain, that's my default setting. If I'm ever in pain, I just want to eat.
Of course,
Living in Switzerland, pain au chocolat, I'd buy a pack of six, and that would just be my... That was my thing. That was my thing. And my husband, Simon, would say to me, oh, did you eat your lunch today? I left you a sandwich. I go, oh, yeah. Didn't. Just ate pan au chocolat.
But you must be really interesting to the medical profession with your history and the fact that you... Because I know I do believe in the redirection of pain, because, you know, I couldn't quite get... what do you call it again? I can't remember.
EFT.
And
Is it carpal tunnel syndrome or something?
No,
or
you use the needles. I forgot.
Oh, the acupuncture.
Acupuncture. I do get that, and I think it's redirecting the pain, isn't it? Because when we hurt our hand, all the signals are going towards that little spot to say, fix it. And your signals have got all mixed up.
Yeah, they didn't stop.
And they needed redirecting. Yeah.
I went to see Dr. King at... that was at... St. Peter's, and I'd never seen him before. I'd seen his colleague, and he was expecting a completely different person. And I was only partway through my recovery then, but I walked in there, and he couldn't believe it. And he said, do you know what? Sometimes us consultants, us doctors, we get it wrong. And there was a book, and I can't remember what it was, but he recommended it to me, and I've still got it. And he said to me, you know, it's brilliant to see that you've proved us wrong. He said, that's a good thing.
Do you remember the name of the book?
No, I can't remember the name of the book, but I've got it at home because it was really interesting. It's just about how the things we are told, if you're told you're not going to get better, or you're told if you eat that you're going to get fat, then it happens, because we make it happen. So by changing your perception and the way you think about things, you can change pretty much anything.
So going back to the hospice, how many marathons and fundraising things have you done for them so far?
So I have done 3 walks for them. So we do the Moonlight Walk. This is the first time I'm doing marathon for them.
And how much money do you think you've raised over the years?
So I have raised altogether. I have raised about 3,000.
Wow!
But for other, I've done breast cancer charities and all kinds of different things through my lots of different things.
Does that make you feel even better? The fact you know you're actually raising money for something that's such a worthwhile cause.
Yes, it does. It's funny because you feel the pressure, because you think, I really want to do this. I really want to do this for them. It's £46 a day for one patient in there is what it costs, and you think my 3,000. I mean, how long is that? How far is that going to go? But you know, it's something, isn't it?
Well, they do such a good job, don't they? As you've actually confirmed. But they're saying for every £5 of costs that they actually have. They need to raise £4 from voluntary income, which, you know, seems very sad in a way, but it's good that there's people like you around to do it, isn't
there's it? There's lots of us. Yeah. There's lots of people who are doing things for Sambia. There's lots of people on the shops.
So if someone today, one of our listeners, hopefully, will want to contribute to what you're doing, how can they do that?
I have a Virgin Money giving page. It's got a very long link, though. I wouldn't be able to read it out because it's all dot and forward slash. But it's actually up on the on your page, which is your Facebook page, the
so
Just Women.
They need to look for your name, which
yes.
is...
So it's Joanne Wright. So you can actually look on the Virgin Just Money page, which is Joanne Wright, and I'm running for Sambia, and that's the London Marathon, or on your Facebook page, the Just Women page, you've put a post up and a link as well. So it's on there too.
Right. And also, I think if anyone else wants to take part in events for the hospice, they can actually go on the hospice website page, which is www.wsbhospices.co.uk, or they can contact the events team on fundraising at wsbhospices.co.uk, or they can call 01483 881 752. So hopefully you've inspired a lot of people to be able to do the same thing. And do the hospice manage to get you into the London Marathon? Because often it's quite difficult to get a place, isn't it?
I know, I was really shocked. I didn't think they were going to be able to. I got the call and I leapt all over the place. I was so happy.
Well done.
Because it's one of, the most well-known probably in the world, isn't it?
It is, and it's the hardest one to get into. So
you're very excited, is it?
I'll be really happy to wear that shirt that says Sambia on it. I'll be really proud.
It's high profile as well, isn't it? So that would be great.
So we'll have to look out for you then, because you'll be on the television, won't you?
Look out for me.
Will you be wearing anything?
Hopefully.
I've got the Sambia shirt, it's got my name on.
We'll be looking for
you. So you'd have to look for me.
And what sort of time are you expecting to get?
I'm hoping 4.5 hours. The last time I did the marathon, it was 4 hours 50 minutes. I'm hoping.
Well, good
luck. 4.5, but we shall see.
Yeah. And we'd very much like to talk to you again afterwards.
Thank you.
Even if it's not on the Just Women programme, we can talk to one of you and put it out on Brooklyn's Radio.
Brilliant.
So that people would actually know how you got on.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you.
So thank you for coming in and talking to us about it. And I hope the weather's not too hot, not too cold, or whatever. So that's the problem, isn't it?
No snow. We got rid of that.
No ice or anything.
Icy feet.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Jan, for coming.
Thank you for
here.
Having me. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk, or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.